Football is fun. Why shouldn't your football podcast be the same?
Follow and listen to Heed the Call NFL podcast with Dan Hansis and Mark Sessler wherever you get your podcasts.
We go back to square one. It's back to the bottom again, and we got to build this thing back up.
Your Bears franchise coach. Look, if you got a franchise quarterback, thanks to that coach, he must be your franchise coach. So there we go. That's Ben Johnson saying we're starting all over. We're going to the bottom. Give me all the Lego blocks, and I'll show you where they go and what you guys have to do. Welcome and welcome back to Saturday Suckage, broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealer. Phone number here at the Score, 312-644-6767. Text line, 312-644-6767. Been very active, our text line, especially in response to homework done, research done by Trash Panda. Went back and tried to find the last time the Bears had two guys with double-digit sacks, because we're talking about Max Crosby and Montez Sweat, and had to go back to 93. More than 30 years, Wani's first year. Richard Dent, Trace Armstrong. Oh, my goodness. That needs to be changed. What are the odds of that? Let's find out. Joining me on the Circus Sports Illinois hotline is Nicholas Moriano of the Nicholas Moriano Show. Download the Circa app today. Nicholas, welcome to Saturday Suckage. Thank you for taking time out to join me.
Thank you for having me.
So, we're talking about double-digit sack guy. Two guys with double-digit sacks. If you can bookend that, you can scare the tourney. The Bears need that. And so, whether they like DJ Moore or not, they want to trade the salary, and the salary cap just went up. You can afford more than you thought. You got a raise in your allowance. Why don't you tell the class, share with the class where you rank defensive line or parts of the defensive line? The edge would be different than defensive tackle, along with left tackle. Where do you rank those areas in terms of concern? What needs to be addressed first in free agency and or the draft?
Yeah, right now, I mean, it's like a 1A, 1B situation for me, because I don't expect Ozzie Trapillo to really play at all next season. That patellar tendon rupture injury is something that, you know, keeps guys out for a long, long time. And that's what Ryan Pohl said, that it would be deep into next year. So is the plan to, you know, have Joe Tooney be the left tackle? If not, are you going to maybe sign Braxton Jones back to a one-year deal? Or just keep him on the roster to ensure that you at least have somebody at that position? So that is something that I think before the injury now is a major priority for Ryan Pohl to get that right. But when you look at the pass rush, it was just so inconsistent with Montez Sweat, Austin Booker, and then you have guys get injured throughout the season where, yes, you need to upgrade that as well. And you can look at edge, you can look at D-tackle. You need to get both more production out of both those positions. But for me, I would put slightly ahead is finding a left tackle that, whether that's in free agency on a one-year deal or if you're looking to draft another player, by all means. Like, I think with Ozzie Trapillo's injury, of course you want the best for him, but there's just no guarantee, right, that he's going to be the same player and that maybe 2 years from now he's going to be able to be back to that left tackle position. So I'm going to put left tackle slightly ahead of both edge and defensive tackle right now.
My guest is Nicholas Moriano joining me on the Score. This is Saturday Suckage. We're talking Bears here, free agency, draft as they move along. Sometimes you look at a Super Bowl team and you say, well, you know what? We want one of those. We want one of those. We want to be like that. You use them as a model. And looking at Seattle, where they get a lot of pressure, doesn't seem to require, I don't know how much blitzing it requires, but they seem to be able to determine a game the way they want to determine a game. What would you think, how would you imagine it would have gone? Bears against Seahawks, the Bears offense, the Caleb's cardiac kids against Seattle's defense after what you saw the Rams and Bears play.
Yeah, I mean, look, Seattle is just a really complete team. I think the one way that you're maybe envisioning a competitive matchup between the Seattle Seahawks and Chicago Bears. If Sam Darnold were to revolt back to the Sam Darnold that creates all these turnovers with an opportunistic defense like the Bears, maybe that's how you can see it being close. And, you know, we didn't see that from Sam Darnold against the Los Angeles Rams. Arguably had his best game of the season when it needed to most. So, yeah, that would have been a tough matchup, especially just given how well that defense plays. And, you know, a lot of teams that made it to the Final Four, a lot of their pressure comes from those defensive tackles. So where you're not needing to bring all these extra defenders in blitz packages because you're getting everything done up front with your front four. And when you look at the top four teams that were, you know, in the AFC NFC championship games, their duos at the defensive tackle positions were ranked among the highest in the league in pressures created. And so when you look and compare that to the Bears, they just don't have that. So I think that would have been an interesting matchup too, thinking how the Seattle Seahawks defensive tackles would have gone against a front in the Bears that, you know, is one of the best in the interior. But again, you had Joe Tooney playing left tackle, and that would have probably been the case had they moved on from the Los Angeles Rams game.
Let's talk about that, because most football players or football coaches will tell you, don't make one move to make two positions worse. Now, I don't know if left tackle got worse with Joe Tooney there than whatever they expected of Theo Benedet against Jared Verse. Maybe it was the same, maybe it got better, but left guard had to be worse only because Joe Tooney was not there. And I think moving Joe Tooney neutered what they were doing on all those fourth downs or fourth and short, and may have even, and that alleged, not allegedly, that led to Ben Johnson deciding not to try to win the game on a two-point conversion against the Rams after the miracle to Cole Kmet. And the fallout from that seemed to me that decision hurt them at the end, because he didn't like his short yardage options, and it had been really good all season when it was Tooney, Dahlman, and Jonah Jackson. Do you think there's anything to that? Do you think that played a role in why the Bears have been eliminated from the playoffs?
You know, Jordan McFadden filled in at left guard, and, you know, just rewatching that game, I thought he played, you know, decent for a guy that, you know, had one snap, if I'm not mistaken, before that in week 15 for a guy who didn't play much. I thought he played, you know, somewhat decent against a talented defensive front from the Los Angeles Rams, and same goes to Joe Tooney. But really, when you think about the Bears' run game, over the last course of the month, it just wasn't the same. When there's a shootout against the 49ers where Caleb Williams in the passing game had to match Brock Purdy and their passing attack, so you didn't really see as much running. But also in the season finale against Detroit, it really wasn't as prominent. Even in the wild card against Green Bay, I'm fairly certain that the Packers outran the Bears in that game. So there was something going on at the end of the kind of final stretch of the season where even Ben Johnson even acknowledged that he would like for that unit to have played a little bit more consistent than what it was doing earlier on in the season. So I don't know if the one move correlated to that, because there were signs that the running game just wasn't as effective and efficient as it was earlier on in the season.
My guest is Nicholas Moriano of the Nicholas Moriano Show. That's where you can find him. You can Google it. He's Googleable. Let's talk about that last offensive play. DJ Moore, okay, some people think he quit. Okay, maybe he shouldn't have been out there. Maybe he was concussed. Maybe he was hurting somewhere else. It didn't play out the way Caleb Williams thought it was going to play out. Said it was a miscommunication. Ben said it was a miscommunication. So there's a lot of BS being floated out there, and I don't know why. Do you know why? Do you know what happened? Was DJ Moore, and DJ Moore has not addressed it, so it leads to wild speculation, and we've made up trades about that. So what do you know about that last offensive play, DJ Moore's role in it, and do you expect DJ Moore to be a Bear next season?
Yeah, so I mean, regarding the last play, other than the miscommunication that you highlighted, and, you know, Ben taking, you know, accountability for it, if there was miscommunication, that's on him. But it did, when you rewatch it, clearly DJ Moore is not, it doesn't look like he's 100% on that play, to be completely honest. And when he's kind of slowing down, it's almost because he's like indecisive of what's about to happen. And, you know, anytime you're indecisive as a football player, regardless of position, you're gonna create some bad things that happen. And obviously the interception overtime was the result. So I had nothing more on that. And then, you know, not hearing from DJ doesn't help just clarify what was going on. The second part of that question, do I expect him to be on the team or what the kind of the prediction there? I'm up in the air. I mean, I could see reasons why you would want to maybe trade a DJ Moore. You allow guys like Luther Burden, Colson Loveland, Roma Dunze to, you know, really be the future of this offense, but you're also saving cap space as well if you trade him post June 1st, $24.5 million. But I also look at it this way. Like, if you trade a guy like DJ Moore, who did have a down season by his standards, but you are taking away a weapon from Caleb Williams. And despite, like, how that last play went for DJ, I mean, there was a touchdown he caught earlier in that game. There was a touchdown he caught in overtime against the Green Bay Packers. The touchdown in the playoff game against the Green Bay Packers. So he came up in some clutch moments, and I just think that is valuable. And what Ryan Poles was saying about how he was able to fight through injury, that really resonated with him. So it's going to be really interesting with DJ Moore. If the Bears wanted to as well, you can get creative by, you know, converting some of his base salary into signing bonuses, and you can convert money to save cap if that's really the issue there. But it is he is a weapon for Caleb Williams going into year two of Ben Johnson's offense. How does that evolve with all these playmakers that you have? So I at this point in time, it really is up in the air where DJ is going to be, if he is on the Bears or not.
You bring up Ryan Poles, and you didn't really need to have the Ryan Poles decoder ring working to understand when he asked about the safeties, neither of them could be, both could be gone, both could be back, one could be back, but he certainly loves Byard more than he loves Brisker, or seems more likely to push hard to bring Byard back. Not as much with Brisker, who had a wonderful season, ended the season really well, and it still remains a concussion question. How do you expect safety to play out with the new salary cap terms, if that matters at all, Nicholas?
Yeah, I would expect the Bears and Kevin Byard to get something done. I don't think Kevin Byard is looking to make top of the market, especially given his age and just some of those factors, because when you look at even beyond what he does on the football field, he is one of the leaders in the locker room. And that, I think, is valuable to Ben Johnson, to Ryan Poles. And then obviously you factor in the football part of the equation. He showed some really good range, even despite his age and how many years he's been in the league at this point. And if you can get him on a deal that makes sense for both teams, I'm not saying take a team-friendly deal, but something that makes sense for a guy like Kevin Byard, given where he's at in his career, then you make that happen. And then for Jaquan Brisker, like, this is the first year we saw him play all, you know, 17 regular season games into the postseason, had a phenomenal last game against the Los Angeles Rams. But that's where I think money's going to play a huge factor into the Bears being able to retain a guy like that. I'm sure Poles would like to. He was his second overall draft pick back in 2022 behind Kyler Gordon. But I just think the money's going to get in the way of that. And Jaquan Brisker, by all means, should go out and get, you know, whoever pays him the most. You're not guaranteed to play, you know. Look, this is his first year he's been healthy all season. He's not guaranteed to do that in the future. So he should go look out to see who's going to pay him the most and give him an opportunity to still obviously be a strong safety in this league. But I do expect Byard to be back, and then you can, there's options in free agency, and then you can get creative in the draft as well if you want to get somebody maybe on day two, day three to fill in that strong safety spot.
Those Bears thoughts are offered by Nicholas Moriano of the Nicholas Moriano Show. We're talking Bears here on The Score, Chicago Sports Radio 670. So Declan Doyle, the offensive coordinator, the aide-de-camp, the chief of staff, essentially, for Ben Johnson's offense. Ben Johnson calls the plays, but somebody gets them all organized. And it's specific to what Ben Johnson wants, the energy demanded would seem to require, I mean, Ben Johnson liked the idea of having somebody under 30 do it because of what he knew it would be required. Now that Declan Doyle has been hired as the offensive coordinator, Baltimore Ravens, who has the inside track? Who's likely to replace him in Ben Johnson's world?
And it's a fascinating question because obviously you want to go to people that he's had connections with. Tanner Engstrand, who was actually just recently let go from the New York Jets, the OC over there. They overlap for 5 seasons in Detroit. So that could potentially make sense as an offensive coordinator who will obviously not be calling plays. But the Bears did hire Boston College's offensive coordinator, Will Lungs, who they were both walk-ons, him, Lungs, and Ben Johnson at North Carolina back in 2004. And that's a guy in Lungs who's been, he has followed Bill O'Brien literally everywhere, Penn State, Texas, Alabama, the Patriots, and then obviously Boston College. I would think, though, whoever is in that position, one of the main criteria is you have to be an elite communicator, because that's what Declan Doyle effectively had to do on game days when he was up in the box, relaying the most important information to Ben Johnson, what he's seeing on the field, personnel tendencies, but also communicating with the position coaches, wide receivers, tight ends, guys like that. But you need to be able to, one, decipher a lot of information quickly, then distribute it to Ben Johnson and the rest of the coaching staff. And I would assume that maybe that position, the offensive coordinator, is still up in the box to have that vantage point. But that's got to be the number one criteria that I think Ben Johnson's looking for out of whoever's going to be the next offensive coordinator for the Chicago Bears.
Well, we've certainly seen Antoine Randall communicate loudly. He does not even need a microphone to get Ben Johnson's attention from the press box down to the field. He does it loudly and authoritatively. I don't know about JT Barrett, and so I don't know what you think of the feasibility either of them gets that job. Likely both will get consideration, but I don't know that either of them gets that job. Antoine Randall, he's already assistant head coach. He holds a title seemingly above offensive coordinator. But JT Barrett as a quarterback's coach would seem to be, that would be the next step. Is it likely? What do you know?
Yeah, no, I mean, and he definitely is on the younger side too, only 31. Just the few interactions that you have throughout the year with, some of the position coaches, JT Barrett, very soft-spoken. And maybe it's obviously different if he's in, a setting where he would be potentially an offensive coordinator. But, yeah, that would be, I think, if you're looking at the current staff that the Bears have, like who would they want to upgrade internally? That guy, I think that's the guy that makes the most sense. But it's going to be interesting to see how the Bears approach that. If JT Barrett even wants that for that position, because I know he's worked really well with Caleb Williams. They connect on a deeper level, just because JT only being 31, he's not quite as old as some of the other kids. I mean, I just turned 31, so it's like he's somebody that I think still resonates with Caleb Williams and what he's doing, and obviously helping him out on a day-to-day task of being quarterback of the Chicago Bears.
Before I let you go, Nicholas, it would seem to be, if this text is any indication, it would help to whiteboard why the play caller, Ben Johnson, even needs an offensive coordinator. Could you share with the class how those duties get divvied up and explain to our 815 texter and anybody else out there who has questions why the play caller needs an offensive coordinator?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, think of the non-play caller play caller for the Bears, what the position would be. It's somebody that's just an extension of Ben Johnson that's going to help him out with everything that comes with game day, but also all the preparation that goes into a game week. That's a big part. That was a big part of Declan Doyle's job, to look into specific matchups, break down the film, and then relay that information to Ben Johnson and the rest of the Bears coaching staff. So Ben can't do it all. And obviously he has his tasks with play calling and making sure he's getting all of his players in the best positions possible. But you need these additional coaches on your staff to divvy up some of those responsibilities. That's why Declan Doyle was a very valuable piece, and he's going to be a valuable piece for the Ravens staff, but that's why you need it. Because Ben Johnson can't do everything, even though he did so much in his first year as the Bears head coach.
Well done, Nicholas. Nicholas Moriano, thank you very much for joining me today. Appreciate your time and your information. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Nicholas Moriano of the Nicholas Moriano Show. Football knowledge. Look at that. Dropping it here, dropping it there, and 815 texture. I hope that helped you out. Now you have a better understanding of things. Top of the hour, I will talk with Julia Poe of the Tribune. She covers the Bulls and trade deadlines coming up, and we'll find out what that might or might not mean. By the way, let me call your attention to this, speaking of which. Tonight, the Bulls are on the road to take on the Heat. Pre-game coverage begins at 6:45, tip-off at 7 on The Score and the Fitzgerald Equipment Bulls Radio Network, powered by Heli Forklifts. Take a break. When I come back, I have a whole bunch of stuff. Fight, 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 fight. It's just, there's a lot of fighting going on, and I don't want you to miss it. So we'll recap that for you. People going at it, things going at it. It's just, it's wonderful. And it's great to stand back and watch other people fight, isn't it? Come on. That's a really great thing to watch. This is Steve Rosenblum. This is Saturday Suckage. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
What's up, little psychos? I'm Investigator Slater, host of the Psychopedia podcast. Psychopedia is a true crime podcast delivering raw, real, and absolutely gripping episodes every single week. I dig deep to uncover fascinating details of heinous true crime cases while exploring criminology and psychology theories. I take you into the absolute darkest corners of the human psyche, my favorite territory, and present cases like you've never heard them before. Follow and listen to Psychopedia everywhere you get your podcasts.
Fight, 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 fight.
Any chance a Trash Panda gets to play a Simpsons drop, it's going to be there. Right in his wheelhouse. Homer yelling, fight, fight, fight. And that's what we're doing this segment. So we have an update, right? Julia Poe said, no, after I promoted it and said what a big deal this is going to be and how life-changing it'll be for everybody. And no. Is that what we know?
Trash Panda? She got tied up with her actual job, unfortunately, so she can't join us.
I cannot believe the way people use that as such a lame excuse.
The audacity, honestly.
Okay, well, no instant fame for her by appearing on Saturday Suckage. But we'll...
What a missed opportunity.
We will fill time. We have stuff and stuff and stuff. There's a new Miracle on Ice documentary out, and I started crying before it even aired, and we lost a treasure. We lost a treasure yesterday. So we'll do that later. Meanwhile, fights. A lot of fights going on. A lot of fights going on. This, I think, will make Trash Panda angry, because there's a lot of fights. One includes a former Bear, a Bear failure, a former quarterback, the captain of America's hockey team, by the way, a volcano, and a fault line. You just never thought it could be that widespread, but that's part of what we do here, Saturday Suckers. So the first bit of beefing involves Bayless Jones. Did you know he was still in the league?
Trash Panda? I knew. I didn't know what team he was on, though.
Well, apparently he's a Seahawk.
Oh, good for him.
And after the Rams beat the Bears, he tweeted just a laughing emoji.
And then you want to talk about a who you crapping thing.
I knew that.
That bugged me because, and I'm not the only one that pointed this out, the Bears gave him every chance to not be a bum. Like, every opportunity, they held on to him for damn near the entirety of his rookie contract, despite how bad he was, despite all his mistakes. They kept giving him a chance. They let him change his position. Every opportunity to show that he could make it in the NFL. And when all those chances were exhausted and he still sucked, they cut him. That's his fault. And he's going to laugh at them? Dude, the reason you have any NFL tape at all is because they gave you that chance. So you shouldn't be laughing at them. What a jerk.
He sucks, which is why we're talking about him. And he's shameless, which is an interesting career choice. But here's what I like in the fight with Bayless Jones. However he's going to troll the Bears, texter, I mean, Twitter after Twitter after Twitter, quote tweeted that face, Velus Jones, and said something like, after posting this, he fumbled his phone. So good. All right, Homer.
Fight.
The next fight started with some random tweeter watching the Patriots-Texans playoff game. And the post was, C.J. Stroud has the best defense in the world and has regressed to Charlie Batch. To which the real Charlie Batch posted, how'd I catch a stray in this? I love that, Charlie.
Fight.
Next bit of beefing, moving right along. D. Orlando Ledbetter of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution covers the Falcons. Falcons hired Kevin Stefanski before they hired Ian Cunningham. Ledbetter tweeted, Kevin Stefanski had a dumpster fire at quarterback in Cleveland. Baker Mayfield and Deshaun Watson failed, which started a chain reaction to 11 other starters. Quarterback Shedeur Sanders closed out last season with 7 starts. That tweet drew the attention of Baker Mayfield. Not Maker Mayfield, but Baker Mayfield, the real, the one. Failed is quite a reach, pal. Still waiting for a text call from him after I got shipped off like a piece of garbage. Can't wait to see you twice a year, coach. Mayfield off the top rope. But wait, there's more. At the bottom of Mayfield's quote was one of those added content boxes, like to explain the story, also tell you if something's lying. And it says, under Stefanski, 2020 to 2025, the Browns had 13 starting quarterbacks. Baker Mayfield, however, led them to an 11-5 record in 2020, their first playoff berth since 2002, and win since 1994. He played through a significant shoulder injury in 2021. I guess Bucks-Falcons game just became a blood war. The next fight comes in the wake of the college football title game, won by Indiana. Indiana Hoosiers completed a perfect football season that nobody saw coming. Yahoo senior writer Dan Wolkin tweeted this of an interaction with mega donor, Hoosiers mega donor, Mark Cuban. I asked Mark Cuban if this was as the most unlikely championship in American sports, quote, ever, even the Miracle on Ice. I don't think there's anything that compares to this. Captain America himself, Mike Ruzioni, quote, tweeted, I don't know, Mr. Cuban, but he admitted, get a better look at the reality. Great win for Indiana. Congratulations. Don't put it in an Olympic category. It's actually a good argument, right? I mean, a good discussion. Which was the bigger miracle? Indiana, after a century of suckage in football, they win the title, they go undefeated. They beat the cheap shot bleeps from Miami, some would say, or a bunch of college kids defeating a professional team masquerading as amateurs with those Olympic rules.
That's a tough one. I still want to lean the Miracle on Ice, right? Because when is the last time the Soviets had lost a game prior to that?
Last time they had not won an Olympic gold medal was when the U.S. did it in Squaw Valley in 1960, and Herb Brooks was the last player cut from that team.
Right. I remember that. And so, yeah, the Indiana thing is one of the most incredible turnarounds you'll ever see, but, let's not mitigate how monumental the U.S. beating the Soviets in 1980 was.
I'm not. You see that? You all see the new doc. We'll talk about that a little later. It was spectacular, and it showed you just how what it took and how the U.S. was masterfully coached. And that's the one thing that I will say, Cignetti and Brooks, Kurt Cignetti, Indiana, Herb Brooks, Miracle on Ice team, what they did together, what they did the same to get their teams together, they weren't looking for the best players. They were looking for the best team.
Don't want the best players, I want the right players.
That's exactly it. And that's what Herb Brooks did, to the point where it upset USA hockey officials. Like, wait, we have a say in this. He goes, no, you don't. I'm the coach. This is what I'm doing. And Cignetti was the same way. Cignetti said, I'm looking for guys who fit this program, guys who want to come here. I know the kind of character I'm looking for, the kind of talent I'm looking for. And they did it with such a almost an impersonal way. You watch Kurt Cignetti on the sidelines, you watch Herb Brooks behind the bench, and they were the same thing. And I think I love having the discussion. I'm with you. I'm standing firmly on the Miracle on Ice. That's the greatest sports story in American history. Homer, got something to say?
Fight!
The next fight, Homer, is an actual fight, a fist fight. It was a goalie fight. I wanted to get to this last week, but we took a different tact. We went a different way. But there was a ruckus in the San Jose end. Sharks goalie Alex Nedeljkovic was throwing gloves and waffle boards. See, before goalies get all the stuff off, they're whacking you with a waffle board or a stick, and they got bigger equipment than you got. And here comes Bob. Bob's coming from the other end, Sergei Bobrovsky. It marked the first goalie fight since 2020. We just don't have enough goalie fights. Goalie fights are, even if you hate fighting, like you have no use for it anymore, especially with guys wearing shields and, you know, you just, and cages and like, no. But goalie fights, we always got time for that. First goalie fight since 2020. Nedeljkovic is one of only five goaltenders with a goal, an assist, and a fight in his career. Look at that. A goal, assist, and a fight. The others, with this goalie version of a Gordie Howe hat trick, Ron Hextall, boy, could he shoot. And boy, would he hurt you with that stick. Chris Osgood, which I'm surprised to find on here. I didn't know that. Mike Smith and Billy Smith. Billy was the kind of guy, the goaltender, who scared his own team. In the 80s when the Islanders were dynasty, everybody stayed away from Billy. He would do his job. Your job was to stay away from Billy.
Fight!
One last fight. And I have to say, I must admit, I didn't know that Mount St. Helens had a Twitter account. But apparently the volcano that exploded in 1980 and took 57 lives and killed hundreds of animals did more than $1 billion worth of damage, when $1 billion was a lot of money, does in fact have a Twitter account. So, Mount St. Helens tweeted before the Niners went to Seattle for that playoff game, "If the Seahawks don't win today, I'm taking out the West Coast." After the Seahawks won, Mount St. Helens tweeted, "Okay, you can all go home now. We good." And last week, after the Rams beat the Bears, Rams go to Seattle for the NFC Championship game. Mount St. Helens added again, "If the Seahawks don't beat the Rams, I'm taking out the West Coast." Seems to be a pattern here. And all of a sudden, because it's the Los Angeles Rams, the San Andreas Fault, because, of course, the San Andreas Fault has a Twitter account, tweeted, You won't, bitch. This is getting personal between...
This is amazing.
The beef continued long enough to include Lake Tahoe. To which the San Andreas Fault tweeted, bitch, I made you and I'll take you out. San Andreas Fault might need to see some anger management. Meanwhile, Mount St. Helens was talking about erectile dysfunction.
That's amazing.
And then the San Andreas Fault made its last argument. I can make the world actually crumble. Mount St. Helens just gets wasted and throws up everywhere. Okay. Follow that. See what happens after the Super Bowl, whatever Mount St. Helens has to say. So I'll take a break. And when I come back, we'll have a meeting of the Wake and Bake Club. As you know, the score, Monday, 8 o'clock, will be on 104.3 FM. And the whole thing to FM, the simulcast on FM was done. So the Wake and Bake Club would have a proper sounding home. And so, in honor of that, we'll present you with a legendary football player whose nickname should have been Megapot. We'll explain that. Well, we'll let him explain that. This is Chicago Sports Radio, soon to be 104.3. But for now, just Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score.
Looking for something smart, soulful, and full of heart? I'm Jen Hatmaker, host of For the Love, the podcast where we talk about what really matters. Love and family, faith and purpose. Every week, I'm joined by incredible guests for honest conversations that invite all of us to live with more intention, more laughter, and more connection. Join us on For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
There's something important I was supposed to do today.
Dopest dope I've ever smoked. Hands down, dopest dope I've ever smoked.
Wake and Bake Club.
I love weed.
I smoke weed every second of every day.
Hey, I am your stoner.
Even Smokey the Bear is going, only you can... I knew this.
We're so high right now.
We're not low.
Open up the door. It's Dave.
Who?
Dave. D-A-V-E. Will you open up the door? Yeah, Dave.
Dave?
Right, man. Dave. Now, will you open up the door?
Dave's not here.
Oh. Hey. Smoke weed every day.
I had the flu one time. Did a gummy bear. I was like... breakfast at Bernie's, you know, the dead guy.
Yeah.
I was supposed to go to a party, and I went to the party, and they sat me in a chair, and people sat beside me, took pictures, and I'm sitting there like, breakfast at Bernie's.
Smoke weed every day.
Comes highly recommended. Welcome in, welcome back. Steve Rosenblum, Wake and Bake Club, part of Saturday Suckage. The first item on the Wake and Bake Club agenda today for this meeting involves former Lions receiver Calvin Johnson, Megatron. He was on the St. Brown Brothers podcast recently. And apparently we should have called him Megapot. Give a listen.
Did you smoke throughout your whole career?
For the most part, yeah.
You ever play a game like Faded?
Heck yeah. Well, yeah, you can only be so faded, though, because, right. Like, how it would work was, like, there were some games, like, towards the end of my career. I didn't even do it towards the end of my career, because I was at this point where I was like, man, I don't know how the hell I'm going to get through this game today. Lord, like, help me guide my feet, like, because I don't know how I'm going to get through this game. And I just be like, you know what? Bump it. I'm going to spark this thing. like, for the game, like, home games, there's points in time where I'd be like, man, I'd be on the way to that stadium. I was like, man, I don't know how I'm going to make it today.
Right.
And I probably did it a handful of times throughout my career.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is, more times than not, I had a good game, too.
Really?
That's funny. I feel like
I never had a bad game.
Breakfast of Champions. Calvin Johnson, Megatron, talking about sparking before games. Never had a bad game.
Sometimes
they had good games. Look at you. But see, this is back when a time when he played, the NFL, in its sick wisdom, wanted to get you hooked on opioids. They wanted their players hooked on opioids. Here you go. Here's your opioids. You'll get addicted to them. And we're not going to let you do pot as a way of managing your pain. We're going to do that. So that kind of changed, and it's about time, but still the NFL can be pearl-clutching. Johnson's use of drugs, he teamed up with Rob Sims. They've launched a cannabis company devoted to developing strains and products. Place an emphasis on wellness. You go, Megapot. You go.
Megapot. I love that.
Megapot. All right. Come on.
Nate Smoke Paul. Weed every day.
Here you go. For those of you planning vacations, short-term rentals like Airbnbs in Washington State would be able to offer guests complimentary marijuana pre-rolls under a bill introduced this week. The legislation would create a new permit category for short-term rentals, enabling them to supply guests, provided they're over the age of 21, with a free joint up to a gram of cannabis. And so the listing could be 3 bedrooms, 2 bathrooms, 1 joint. There you go. I'm all in favor of that.
Smoke weed every day.
The Ohio Division of Cannabis Control reported that dispensaries in Ohio sold more than $1 billion worth of legal, recreational, and medical marijuana in 2025. So there, Joe Kim Noah, there's a reason to go on vacation in Cleveland. We finally answered that question from 10 years ago or whenever
we got it here, though, you know?
Smoke weed every day.
Yeah, but Michigan, too, it's cheaper in Michigan than anywhere. At least
well,
it was.
Well, the taxes are going up in Michigan. You can. The thing about Michigan is you can buy.
The best reason to go to Michigan.
Well, you can buy more pot.
True.
Maximum here is 100 milligrams per container, let's say, of gummies.
If you don't have a medical license, right?
Right. If you don't have a medical marijuana card and you go in like, Otter and I did this week, and we were looking for gummies for sleep and pain management. And you're going to get a container. The max is 100 milligrams of pot. You eat the whole thing, it's 100 milligrams. No matter how you divide it up, 10, 20 gummies, whatever. One, it could be one gummy of 100. But I think it's 500 milligrams per container in Michigan. But come February, was it February? Or January, taxes kicked in. It became mucho dinero. By the way, coming to a United Center near you, the United Center apparently is entering into a historic partnership with two cannabis drink brands. The plans are to provide adult guests with a selection of hemp-derived THC beverages to enjoy. That's the United Center, where the Bulls and Hawks play. The jokes just write themselves.
Smoke weed every day.
Have you tried those weed drinks?
I have not.
They're pretty solid. Revolution Brewery has some really good ones. They started making weed. There's a whole bunch of them out there, but the Revolution Brewery ones are pretty good.
And these are ones with not just CBD. Was it hemp? What did you have in it?
So these ones, the one from Revolution was just THC. But there's different kinds. There's some that are, you know, half THC, half, what's the word?
CBD.
CBD, there you go. And some are just CBD. So yeah, there's a whole bunch of different kinds out there. They're pretty solid, though. They act just as quickly as the, maybe even faster actually than the edibles do.
Really? So what is the, I saw one, I know the Cubs had, I think it was CBD or was it hemp derived, but they had the same kind of deal. They were off at Mynd, M-Y-N-D, I think was the brand, but I don't know what the drink tastes like. Is it, because I don't want a Red Bull. I mean, those are horrible tasting things. Monster.com or whatever, not Monster.com, but Monster drinks, those are horrible. So what does this taste like?
They taste pretty good. They taste exactly whatever flavor they're ever. There's one that I just off the top of my head is like a passion fruit one that's pretty good. So they taste good. They don't taste like an energy drink. They taste almost like a soda, I guess, or something like that. So yeah, they're pretty good. They got a good flavor.
All right,
and they work.
We did a Wake and Bake Club report that they would be available in Target stores on a trial basis in Minnesota. So there you go.
Smoke weed every day.
One last thing, and 309 texter, right on it. You go to Missouri, you can get 1,000 milligrams, 1,000 milligrams of gummies at one time.
I didn't know Missouri legalized it. They finally caught up, huh?
We're not saying they do. I'm not saying they do.
Oh,
either.
You can just get them.
But,
okay.
But here's
I mean, I can get 1,000 milligrams if I want. You know, it's just not going to be upstanding.
By 10, yeah, you can get 10 containers. But here's the thing about from Missouri, I can't tell whether you need it for this reason or thank God they're gone. But this is what, these are the major sports franchises Missouri has lost in the last 75 years. The St. Louis Browns, St. Louis Football Cardinals, the St. Louis Rams, the St. Louis Hawks, the Kansas City Kings, the Kansas City Athletics, the Kansas City Scouts, and now the Kansas City Chiefs. With some of those teams, you needed 1,000 milligrams of pot to watch them. And with some of those leaving, like the Chiefs, you might need it to console yourself. 309 Texter offered this idea. And why didn't we think of this, Trash Panda? We need to get a Wake and Bake Club, a Score brand of pot with 670 milligrams of pot.
Ooh.
Or 104.3. Let's really go for
it.
Oh,
my God.
Yeah. 670 milligrams. We can divide it up in 67 gummies. It's just a bigger...
It's a marketing opportunity there.
It is, especially come Monday when we go 104.3 FM, home of the Wake and Bake Club.
Here's 104.3 milligrams.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
Wouldn't that be it? Yeah, Wake and Bake Club. Score gummies. 104.3. You can't say the point. 104.3.
Excuse me, 104.3.
Milligrams.
104.3 milligrams.
Yep. Or just 670 milligrams. Of Score goodness.
Smoke weed every day.
All right, we're going to take a break and end this meeting here. And when we come back, there's been some response, and we'll bring it up. Me and Trash Panda will discuss this. The idea of miracle as the greatest miracle in sports versus Indiana going undefeated and winning a football title. And there's some distinguishing characteristics. And then I don't know if I misspoke or not, but I'll correct myself about what I said about miracle and its standing in the sports world as a story. I'm Steve Rosenblum, Saturday Suckage, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events. Major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.